to stop pitching the company's facial recognition tool to law enforcement agencies. In a letter to Bezos, those shareholders say they fear the technology could ultimately violate civil and human rights. The tool, which is called Recognition, and instead of a C, it's spelled with a K, has been criticized by privacy and civil rights organizations over concerns it could be used to build a widespread system to identify and track anyone.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
Everyone loves liberty, so why are you letting other people tell you what's best for your health care? Exercise your freedom with Liberty Health Share. Liberty Health Share is a community of people who voluntarily share one another's medical costs. Members are able to take back the freedom to make their own decisions about their health care. Stop letting others tell you what to do. Call us at 855-58-LIBERTY for more information or check us out online at libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org.
Today, House Oversight Committee Chairman Trey Gowdy blasted James Comey in his opening statement at the high-profile congressional hearing regarding the IG report. Let's take a listen to a portion of his comments.
One of the last times I spoke with Director Comey was in a committee hearing. We had a pointed exchange on what I thought was the FBI making decisions based in part on politics. And he, in his typically sanctimonious way, told me that he disagreed. He said the men and women of the FBI do not, quote, give a hoot about politics. Unfortunately, and I use that word intentionally, unfortunately, he was dead wrong. There were agents and attorneys at the FBI who gave a lot more than a hoot about politics. There's Andy McCabe, the former deputy director and acting director of the FBI, an agency which investigates and charges others for making false statements, himself accused of making false statements and showing a lack of candor. I think I recall, perhaps someone can correct me, but I think I recall some of my Democrat colleagues falling over themselves to offer a job to Andy McCabe when he was let go for making false statements and for a lack of candor. But those same colleagues apparently weren't hiring. They didn't have any openings when others, in a related investigation called Russia, were charged with the same offense.
You can check us out online at usaradio.com. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
USA Radio News.
Just like I promised during the campaign, our economic policy can be summed up in three very beautiful words, words that you probably know better than anybody in this country. Jobs, jobs, jobs.
Just a sampling of the remarks delivered by President Trump earlier today at the National Federation of Independent Business's 75th anniversary celebration. being held in Washington, D.C. Also today on Capitol Hill, Senate Republican leaders are rushing to try to pass a bill that would end family separations at the border, including Texas Senator John Cornyn.
What we would do is move these families to the head of the line. In the interim, they would be in a humane, safe, and secure family facility, and hopefully we'll get this problem addressed right away. My hope is this is not going to be something we're going to do over a matter of weeks and months, but something we could do in a matter of days.
This is USA Radio News.
Okay, so the big question for any decision you're going to make, is this actually going to work? Well, if you've heard about MediShare, which is a brilliant way of sharing health care costs, you may have wondered that. Does it work? Well, so did Dr. Stuart Hoover, who initially joined to save a lot of money. The typical family saves about $500 a month. Stuart saved even more.
When we first joined MediShare, we were immediately going from a little over $1,600 a month down to $460 basically a month.
So that's wonderful. But then his wife needed emergency surgery and the bills added up to $160,000.
So we were seeing the bills coming in and then the bills were being paid. Portions were being shared, and the end result of this bill was taken care of.
Yes, MediShare works, and it's so easy to get your questions answered too, so why not? You can call right now, 833-39-BIBLE. That's 833-39-BIBLE, 833-39-BIBLE.
Today, Senator Ted Cruz introduced a bill to keep immigrant families together after they cross the border.
What they should do is sit down and come up with a comprehensive solution that stops it at the border, gives them the wall, but at the same time allows the handling of people in a humanitarian way.
Why is a group of Amazon shareholders raising concerns about the company's new facial recognition tool? USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes reports.
The shareholders want their CEO, Jeff Bezos, to stop pitching the company's facial recognition tool to law enforcement agencies. In a letter to Bezos, those shareholders say they fear the technology could ultimately violate civil and human rights. The tool, which is called Recognition, and instead of a C, it's spelled...
Hello, it's Joe Peters, and it's 4:08 on the 19th of June, and I'm in scenic downtown Flemington, getting started to do my Real Estate Matters radio show. We're going to start with an intro and the weather, and I'll be right back.
This is Georgine Trinkle. I want to invite you to listen to Hot and Hunterd In every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. You'll be treated to discussions on hot topics every week. Hot and Hunterd In provides a more in-depth look at issues that are happening right now. You can catch the show live and call in on what matters to you. Make sure to download the podcast to catch up on all our hot topics.
So, from the trusty weather department of my Android, it looks like it's currently 88. It feels like 188 out there. It is one hot day and some leftover humidity from yesterday. Looks like we're going to have a little bit of rain tonight, maybe 83 degrees overnight. Tomorrow's going to be 84, 80 overnight. Saturday, thunderstorm in the morning, 76. And then on Sunday, we're going to go back up to 87. So Saturday's good. We're going fishing with the kids. It's the week after Father's Day, one of our annual events that we're doing. I'm going to play a few more commercials, and I'll be right back.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. You're listening to WHCR DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
¿Sabía que de cada cinco personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
So once again, it's Joe Peters, and do not have a guest today, so I'm going to go through a couple of articles that I think are pretty germane to this time of the year, vacation time, home safety time, things like that. And I am a real estate agent with Coldwell Banker. I cover all of Hunterdon County and most of Somerset County. I have a website, J-P-E-T-E-R-S, jpeters.com. And you can find most of these articles, plus my newsletters and a wealth of other information on that website. And if you'd like to talk to me, 908-238-0118. I do not take calls while on the show, but give me a call any other time, and I'll be more than happy to pick up the phone if I'm not already talking to somebody else. So let's get started. Let's talk first of all about vacation tips. They say that the fastest way to kill a post-vacation buzz is to return home and then discover that your house is in shambles. Maybe a water pipe broke and you're now trudging through ankle-deep sludge. Perhaps a burglar slipped inside, ransacked the place, gallivanted away with your most valued possessions. Or it could be that you just forgot to clean out the fridge before leaving and now mold has infested every nook and cranny. Just like it's important to shop for excellent vacation deals, it's crucial to make sure returning home from a well-earned trip isn't a hard headache or a disaster. Here are six easily skip steps to keep in mind when you're planning for an enticing itinerary. Of course, somebody is home. Hiring house or pet sitter is the best, although a little costly method to ensure that your home stays just like you left it. House sitters can vary from trusted friend to a family member to somebody who's a professional. Typically, a house sitter will take care of any pets that you're leaving behind, water your plants, collect the mail, sometimes over small tasks. It's challenging to trust somebody enough to be in your home for days, but their presence ensures that burglars avoid the place. Celebrate on social media after the trip. I've been reading a lot about this. Booking a vacation is exciting, and a break from the daily grind, that's often something that you want to share with your friends, family, and acquaintances via social media. But you should probably hold off on the announcement to the whole internet that your home is vacant and ripe for the picking. Websites like Facebook and Twitter make it easy for complete strangers to gather that your personal information and then find out where you live and with a quick online search. If you can't help yourself from announcing the trip and posting the photos, then do yourself a favor and greatly restrict who can share that information. And the same plan of action holds true for automatic email responses and voicemail systems. The rule of thumb is that to say that you're comfortable with somebody before, let me start that again. The rule of thumb is that if you're not comfortable with somebody being in your house while you're not there, then don't tell them, even indirectly, that you're heading off some sweet adventure. Scoundrels might seize that announcement as an open house invitation. You might return to an open front door. Burning the midnight oil. Casing the house is a common tactic for many home intruders. They spend days, sometimes even weeks, monitoring when you're home, what rooms you're in, and what you're doing and who you're doing it with. They'll know your daily habits better than you do. The best way to thwart these folks is to make sure it genuinely looks like somebody's home. Set up an app-controlled light timer that you can even set up the timer control power to stereos or TVs, but don't keep them the same settings each day. Vary them so the lights come on, which rooms they pop up, and for how long. Also, be sure to use compact fluorescent light bulbs to save electricity. I've got a friend who does this. I mean, he just, if you come into the driveway and he's got the alarm set, a light goes on. Then another light goes on, like somebody got up and they're walking around. It's enough to thwart off many people that would be thinking about doing something you don't want them to do. Lock it down, regardless of where you live. It's oddly common that in small towns where everybody knows each other, that folks leave their homes and cars unlocked. If you're involved in this mindset, then you may very well want to leave your door unlocked during the extended absence. And unlocked doors are the biggest burglarize me signals out there. More than 30% of home burglaries happen from unlocked doors. Don't be the person who forgot to close and lock the windows and sliding glass door. Put a dowel rod behind any type of sliding entrance and be sure that the lock is a deadbolt. It's an easy way to prevent entry crime. Imagine how devastating it feels to come back after your trip and discover a charred pile of rubble in your home where your home once stood. Let that feeling sink for a few minutes and then look around as to what electronics and appliances you currently have plugged in throughout your home. A power outage or surge could trip these devices and cause a fire. Now, since you're leaving for certain electronics on timers to discourage home investors invasions, make sure you do not leave plugged in to surge protector. I'm sorry, make sure what you do leave plugged in is a surge protector. You can group electronics and appliances close together to limit the number of protectors that you need to buy. Otherwise, think about how much energy applications like your refrigerator, water heater, and climate control consume. If you don't have plants or animals or open food, then you can pretty much turn off your climate control depending on what the weather is like. Set your water heater for vacation mode to reserve consumption. And last, either remove perishables from the fridge, turn it off, and open the door to prevent mildew, or make sure that the appliance is completely full of non-perishable items. If you do have the empty space, then fill jugs of water there to insulate at the fridge at a lower energy consumption. So what they're saying is if you have empty space, then fill jugs of water there to insulate your fridge and lower energy consumption. I'm not sure I grasp that. Finally, if you're off on an adventure in the winter and ask a trusted neighbor, friend, family member to come by and run the faucets for about 5 minutes each day or two. A tidy home, lived-in home. Final step is extremely easy to skip over. Longer or seasonal trips is how your home looks. Sure, have the lights popping on and off at random times, but is your yard unkept? Are mail flyers or newspapers or packages creating a great pyramid at your doorstep? These are all signals to somebody paying attention that you're not home. Either stop packages or newspapers and stop your mail from being deposited or get somebody to trust to pick it up for you. Plus, if you're leaving in the winter and it snows, make sure somebody shovels your driveway and sidewalk. So, I mean, what we're really saying here is make your home look lived in. Make it look like you're there. Sometimes you might think, well, who would sit and be watching my house? The point is they're not watching your house. People are driving up and down the streets looking for stacks of newspaper and of some of these other things that were mentioned. If your house happens to be one of them, you're inviting them to do something you don't want them to do. You don't want to make it look like you're not home. That's the trick. The other thing that they mentioned up front, and I thought they would get to, but they didn't, is shut your water off. We have a master water switch in our house, and when we go, just in case a pipe bursts or a hose to the back of the washing machine. Most of the time they're braided and they're not supposed to. But why take the chance? Shut the water off to your house unless you have a reason why the water can't be shut off. It's just nice knowing your house is safe while you're gone. And definitely, definitely, definitely lock up. Even lock up if you're going to the store. Lock up if you're going to work. Any house without a lock on it is an invitation, just like any car without a lock on is an invitation for somebody you don't want to be in your house to be in your house. 10 tips for renovations. 10 mistakes that'll keep your home from selling. 9 killer ways to change your kid's room. Ask an HOA expert. So let's go into the 10 tips for a pain-free renovation. So whether you're planning new kitchen cabinets or ripping out the whole kitchen, renovating is exciting. It's not as exciting as the mess that's created, the potential issues with contracts, the mad scramble to come up with more money when something goes awry, when you can't avoid every unpleasantry. While you can't avoid every unpleasantry associated with home renovations, you can be prepared well to keep yours as pain-free as possible. Number one, move out. Depending on how extensive the renovation is, staying in a home while it is going on can be horrible. And trust when we say that this is one of those things that you only think you can go through easily if you've never been through it before. A little time in a friend's house or a hotel instead of cramming your family into a bedroom or a basement with one bathroom to share in a makeshift kitchen will make it worth so much, make your world so much better. I totally agree. Now, if your bathroom or bedroom or kitchen is going to be unassembled for weeks on end, well, then maybe you need another contractor, but you got to sort of temper this with logic. Don't Hoover, but don't fail to check on the work that's being done from time to time. True story, we had our floors redone last month. Goodbye, ugly tile and concrete. Where foundation work has been completed, hello, luxury vinyl plank. And we had to face reality head on. We didn't want to be in her face every day, paying attention to key points uncovered areas where we needed things to be addressed. What we learned was this: finding that perfect balance is a key to establishing trust with your contractor, also making sure that the work is up to your standards. And in the end, having cookies and other treats in the house makes everything a little better. Concentrate on safety. If you're staying in the home and you have kids or pets or both, you want to make sure that your contractors leave their work area as clean as possible and don't create hazards with their equipment. On the first night of our flooring installation, our contractor left his tools, including 2 saws, in an open area, and our dog quickly discovered one. Everyone is fine, but he got to spend the rest of the night in the bedroom. While working at home, contractors should be willing to remove all tools at the end of the day, and at least the equipment should be stacked out of the way and out of the reach of young kids. You can even request that your contractor set up temporary walls and shield your kids from the work site to reduce anything that you want reduced. Budget more than you think. You'll need it. It's always going to cost you more. Always does. Everything takes longer than it should, and everything costs more than you think it is. Setting aside an extra 10% at least will help you avoid freaking out in the panic search for more money in the middle of your upgrade. Invest in a good vacuum and a carload of Swiffer dusters. I can't say it. Swiffer. I put a T in it. Whether you're having your floors done, adding a room, or redoing your kitchen, it's going to get dusty, and it doesn't matter how well your contractor cleans up after your first job is done. It won't be up to your expectations. Don't pay up front. This is common logic. Contractor who seeks payment before the work's begun is a red flag, and you don't want to get duped, so nor do you want to work with somebody whose cash flow becomes a problem that's your problem. Paying for materials as they are purchased is a common, and payment arrangements should include the portion of the work that has certain completion markers, and sometimes worked out, but it feels off. Don't be afraid to stand your ground. So the saying is, if it doesn't feel right, stand your ground. Do your research. Even the most trusted referrals require further research. Perhaps the company is under new management since your friend used them, or the standards have dropped over time. Google the company and check their reviews before you move forward. Communicate, communicate, communicate. Our project was almost derailed by a simple miscommunication that was thankfully discovered and worked through, but that could have derailed the entire flooring installation. 99% of the problems are caused by breakdowns in communication, says so-and-so. Don't overwhelm your contractor with bits of paper and random suggestions. Instead, organize your thoughts, schedule a time, and go over the questions point by point. Then send a line item list of what you decide upon so there isn't a clear paper trail and no misunderstanding. Pack up your valuables ahead of time. Yes, you want to protect yourself from theft, but you also want the things that are important to you to be safe from getting bruised or broken. If your contractor is moving furniture for you, it behooves you to take care of everything that's in the heirloom, or it would devastate you if it was damaged. Check outside when the renovation is done. Some contractors clean up the work better than others. There may be an errant piece of tile or a few wood pieces that you're not aware of on your front lawn because typically come in and out through the garage. But you can be sure that your neighbors will be aware of them, and if you already push the limits of their patience with the constant sound of power tools, now's the time to make sure your front yard isn't an eyesore. All pretty good suggestions. Home renovations are necessary. Everybody will go through them from time to time. I mean, I've seen people not have their kitchen back for a month or longer. I've seen people not having a major bathroom back for the same period of time. Quite honestly, I think if you lay out what you need done, make sure you have a good contractor, and you get reasonable expectations set up front as far as start time, completion time, you can avoid some of this, but I think most people are a little intimidated by the contractor. Even though you're in charge and you're the one paying the bill, sometimes you can get a contractor overstepping their lines. Let's talk about homeowner associations. A lot of us live in townhouses, and it could be a townhouse, it could be a 55-plus, it could be a condo association. Here's a question. The board wants a special meeting with the owners to update them on how it's been doing. However, we assume that an owner has filed a lawsuit against the board will be present. Should we let the owners know that there has been a lawsuit filed, that we have legal representation? If so, how much information should we offer or limit ourselves to? The answer is, how much you divulge about litigation depends on the subject matter. Your attorney should be helpful in giving you the direction. Some highly sensitive issues should be kept confidential, but generally the owners should be made aware of the litigation that is headed to court when the substantial legal costs are possible, the general nature of the litigation, the board's position and issues, names, and is a reasonable approach. Can the developer make exceptions to certain architectural restrictions? Our developer allowed some owners to enclose their decks, and since turnover, the new board says it won't be permitted by others. So there's always a fine line. The management of the association changes. Some things have been grandfathered. In general, it's like a Seinfeld issue. Associations are better or worse. Some are great to work with. Some are not. You're going to have to figure this out and figure out how to work within their rules. So, can a developer make exceptions? The developer has no special right to violate architectural restrictions established by governing documents. However, it is commonly done because the developer wants to sell homes. And if the developer has allowed certain expectations, the board needs to decide whether it's something that they want to be allowed by other owners. To avoid double standard, the answer is usually yes, and the board should develop the approach to standard, that all the work is done the same way with the quality and design. So that was an answer to allow some owners in closer decks and others not. Next question. Let me take my jacket off. I did say it's 88 degrees outside. It feels like it's getting that way inside, too. Okay, sorry for the interruption. We recently had the unit's chimney inspected by fire safety for fire safety reasons. This required access to the units that were facilitated by the manager. One unit was filled with garbage, furniture blocking hallways, piles of clothing, cases of empty cans. The manager informed us, the board, since there was a potential fire hazard. Should the board get involved in a situation? No neighbors have complained. The area outside the condo is tidy, but the resident keeps to himself as pleasant and not a smoker. Answer, there are several issues here. The general rule is that the board or manager should not hold the keys to the units unless there's an emergency or rental management contract in place. Otherwise, either the unit owner or the representative should be present to allow access. However, assuming that the unit owner gave permission to enter, if there's a real fire hazard sanitation problem, the manager should inform that unit owner in writing of the specifics. That said, it is up to the unit owner to respond. In other words, the board and HOA do not have the authority to dictate the residents' lifestyles unless they clearly are affecting the common areas of the neighbors. For example, if the sanitation issue creates a rodent problem, the HOA has the right and the duty to control it. If every homeowners association, there are certain individuals that are pack rats and live like slobs, that is their right as long as their lifestyle does not bleed into the common area and adversely affect the neighbors. Well, those are some pretty intriguing questions about homeowner associations. I mean, the ones that I see, we live in the townhouse complex, and you know, if you put a plant in a planter on the porch railing, you'll get a note from the homeowners association. So you learn not to do it. You put it on the deck, and there's no rule against that, although someday they might get a rule for that as well. They tell you that they only allow planters if they're hung on a certain type of hanging device that does not affect the roof. It's a fine line. Then you get a letter and you see your next-door neighbor still doing it. What do you do then? I think what you've got to do is you got to fit in, and you got to realize that if you've got a homeowners association, the management and what would you call a surveillance job of the homeowners organization to look for people breaking the rules is truly a thankless job, and not get mad at them. If they enforce it uniformly and fairly, then that's the way it should be. I'm not sure that's always the case, and it's just like, why does the manager's unit seem to get their walk shoveled first every time it snows? I'm not sure it's exactly fair, but you got to fit in. And if you don't fit in, then you're just giving yourself extra strife. Next article. 10 mistakes that will keep your house from selling. These are beauties. This was on my site last week, and I looked at some of them, and I said, my God, I've seen that. So, when you're selling your home, you need every advantage you can get, and there are few homes that magically market, ready for the market, with just a little help. If your home needs more than a little help, it's time to get focused. After all, listing your home when it's not in the right condition to sell will probably only end up in frustration. And in the case, frustration, in this case, frustration means your home will be sitting on the market for months with no offers if the errant offense or the errant offense lowball. Okay, so let me say that your home will be sitting on the market for months with no offers or the errant offense lowball. Not sure what that means. If you want to make sure that your home gets sold quickly and for the right price, you'll have to avoid listing it with the following. Excessive damage. Boy, I got to tell you, There's a fine line here. As a listing agent, I know that people say, should I redo the kitchen? I say, no. If you put $50,000 in the kitchen, the best you're going to get is $25,000 or $30,000 out. And it ain't going to be the way the buyer wants it. I would take the $30,000 or whatever you're going to put into it and take it off the price. But here's what they're saying. Maybe the home you're selling is used as a rental and trashed by frat boys, tenants, or maybe you just haven't kept it up the way you should. Either way, those holes in the wall look like the living room was used by a boxing gym. Scratched up floors, like the dinosaurs have clearly been racing in the yard, Darren, except for those 2-foot-tall patches of weeds, is not what the buyer's looking for. Unless you're planning to sell your house for a price that makes it, the buyer emphasizes it's a good deal and ignore the bad and ugly, it's going to need the attention. It mentions carpet in the bathroom. It's just gross. And everybody who walks into a bathroom thinking one of two things, there's got to be mold under there, and there's got to be pee on the floor or around the toilet. And it's one update that you want to make on your list, or if you've already listed your home and it isn't selling. A buyer should know that when your dog likes to mark off where the kids spilled the entire bowl of holiday punch, the stains on your carpet are that bad. They shouldn't want to know, it says. If they are that bad, potential buyers will stroll in and stroll right back out. And they're actually correct. No one wants to buy a pigsty. Invest a few bucks in a new carpet. You'll make the money back since you won't have to drop your price. Pet smells. This is a big one, especially of cats, but it works for dogs as well. Speaking of pets, they smell. You probably don't notice this since you live there every day, but buyers will, and it might be enough to turn them off. Deep clean the carpets and the upholstery, invest in some air fresheners, and remove the cat boxes from the house for showings. And the last thing you want is a potential buyer referring to your house as the stinky one. And let's talk about loud dogs, and this may not be your dog. Loud dogs, one last word on pets. Barking happens, whether it's your dog or the one that belongs to the neighbor, but you don't need that on the day of your open house. Offering to pay for a doggy daycare for the neighbor's pooch can eliminate the issue and help create a serene setting. Your dead lawn. Lack of curb appeal won't necessarily kill a deal. In many cases, the potential buyers won't even get out of the car. In front yard is a mess. The buyers naturally think that the mess continues inside, and that's very true. Bad agent, face it or not. Not all of them are winners. If your agent is rude, uninformed, lazy, uncommunicative, belligerent, unwilling to take your opinions into consideration, get a new one. An agent who isn't giving your client the right type of attention probably isn't going to get the job done. Sloppiness, those drawers and cabinets. People are going to naturally look if the refrigerator is included inside the refrigerator. They're definitely going to look inside the cabinets. And if it looks like things have just been shoved into them, it leaves a bad impression. You need to get the house in order. Unreasonable sellers. Big problems in your house can be deal killers, but they also can be deal sealers. If you are reasonable, if your inspection uncovers plumbing, electrical, and roofing problems are all free and you're unwilling to negotiate, you can kiss that sale goodbye. Absolutely. I'm seeing more and more that it's a seller market in the lower price points, and the sellers can get away with not fixing certain things. But if you give the seller the right to walk away and the seller is settling on your house, not wanting, this is the house I have to have, but it's the only one that's available in my price point, it's a good opportunity for the seller to change his mind. Bad taste. Your poor decorating choices and failure to keep with the trends of the year or century may haunt you when it's time to sell. If it's true that many buyers have no vision and all you have to do is watch house hunters and observe a buyer getting hung up on the paint color to know that it's true. Then you're really in for it when your crowded house is full of ugly, outdated crap. A few ways to start: check the front doors, 15 updates that pay off on HGTV's 10 best secrets for selling your house. Your agent can usually enlighten you on this. I'm an agent, so the first time I walk through a house, I will make some general comments like, I'm not as sure about that color. I think the wallpaper in the hallway is not going to make it, but I'd like to get a second opinion. And what I do then is I invest in a home stager, somebody who can come in and show before and after pictures and come behind me, and I never even have to talk to her, and say, the wallpaper goes. That is a deal killer. That paint is too loud. We need a more subtle color. And what they will do in an hour at my expense is go through the house and do the things that make them look like they're heavy, not me. But they're the professional as far as staging and decorating. I'm the professional as far as getting the house sold, but that's part of it. So I use that 1-2 punch. I try to tell them up front, and if there's some resistance, I suggest I pay for a home stager to come through. And at the end, the stager will typically give them 3 different plans. One, a plan where she advises and they do everything. A second, a plan where she does everything, which is the most expensive. And then one that melds the two together. And if the seller is price conscious, it's usually not the most expensive plan. They take either the middle one or the lower one. So, you got to look at the market you're in. And we're sitting today, depending on your price point, I just gave a talk at lunch at the meetup in Flemington. And there's 2 things that matter. One is your price point and one is your location. It's always this way, but let me just break it down a little farther. If you're under $500,000, your house, unless it's a wreck, will probably sell very quickly. So you have a minor amount of getting it ready for market. You've got to get the carpet stains up. You've got to get the curb appeal done. You've got to get the junk, declutter the house. You may have to get it staged a little. But it should go quickly. If your house is in the 5 to 7s, it's a crapshoot. It's in a point where it's about normal sell time, usually about 6 to 8 months. And you still got to do the things I mentioned, but the more you do, the more chance you got of selling it. If your house is over the 700 mark, you have a challenge to start with. There's not that big of a market for houses. You're going to be competing with houses that used to be 100,000 more than yours that can't sell, and the people have lowered it. So you've got to make your house look like it's the house they want. They got to see themselves living in it. And I'll tell you from my experience, the 3 things that matter the most are curb appeal, that's number 1. Kitchens, that's number 2. And bathrooms, that's number 3. So let's go through them one at a time. Curb appeal means I can see my neighbors and relatives driving up to this house to visit me and saying, wow, that's a nice house. Versus them driving up and saying, my God, why did I buy this? If you expect them to take care of the curb appeal, your house is going to take much longer to sell. And you'll probably get a much less price because in order to sell it, you'll probably have to reduce the price to the point where they think it's a bargain and don't mind fixing the curb appeal. Then let's talk about the kitchen and the bathrooms. When people ask me, I said this earlier, should I redo the kitchen or the bathrooms? I tell them you will never get that money back out of the house. A typical kitchen could cost $30,000 to $75,000 to redo. Let's just pick a middle number. Let's say you put $50,000 into the kitchen. You're at max going to get 60% out of that. So if you're not going to put $50,000 into the kitchen 4 or 5 years before you move, you shouldn't do it when you're ready to move. What you should do is some superficial things. You want to make sure the carpeting or tile is clean. You want to perhaps replace the countertops. And you probably want to make sure the faucets and draw handles are clean. If people feel, wow, this is a gut job, I got to redo the whole kitchen, could be $50,000, they're going to either take it off the price or just move on because they're going to say, you know, based on their price and the fact that I got to put $50,000 in just on the kitchen, it means we're never going to bring the two ends together. I'm not going to sit here and waste time. I need to find a house that I want to live in today. Then bathrooms are very similar, but bathrooms are a little easier because they're smaller. The carpeting shouldn't be in, as it said. The flooring should be clean, and the towels should be neat. You should probably have new towels hanging up so they look nice and neat and aren't used at all. They're just there for show. If your commode is old and outdated, you probably want to replace it. You're talking about $100 or $200. Same thing for the sink, and maybe same thing for the countertops. You don't have to go out and buy marble, but you can put a newer countertop in and make it not look like it's lost in the 60s. It doesn't take a lot of money to get bathrooms looking acceptable. The biggest thing I look in every bathroom is I take back the shower curtain and look at the tiles. If the tiles look they need to be grouted or the seal is broken along the bottom, it's a turnoff, even to the agents. Your tiled area of your bathroom, be it the shower or the area around the tub, should sparkle. And if you can't get it clean because there's years of grime on it, sometimes it's the shower door, sometimes it's the tile, sometimes it's the tub itself, hire a professional cleaner, get it cleaned. Because people are me going to tell you, other people aren't as experienced as myself, and they may say, it looks fine, and you're wondering why your house didn't sell. You're going to find that people see having to do a lot of work or spend a lot of money is a clear turnoff. Now, there's other things in the house, too. You want the carpeting and flooring to look presentable. You want the windows, those double-pane windows with a broken seal. You probably might as well get them fixed up front. You want the paint to be homogeneous. In other words, it should be a scheme. Not every room has to be the same color, but they sort of have to blend together. And you want it to be neutral. You do not want it to be what you think is good to have. I mean, the worst things we see are those pinks and blues and greens in the bathroom. They're like, oh, my God, it's lost in the 60s, as we say. So you're going to sell your house. You're going to have to put a little bit of thought into it. Your agent should be a help. If the agent is worth their weight, they will probably bring a stager in and spend a few $100 to have a stager help you thinking out what needs to be done with the house. And that stager should blend around your requirements. They should say, here are some options you've got. Here's how we can work together to get this done. And they should show you some other houses that were similar to yours and what they look like today. And a stager is going to save you two things. They're going to save you time on the market. Remember, your house should sell quicker. And they're going to save you from people taking off the price because they're going to make the house look like it's worth what you're asking for. Listing price is always important when you go to sell a house. And I do listing price from a couple of angles. I try to find three or four houses with the same features in the same area that have sold in the last 6 months and say, yours fits right in between, you know, between number two and number three, or number three and number four. And based on that, and based on the fact that these sold 6 months ago and we're getting a little bit more money, we make some adjustments and say, here's the price I think you will get for your house, and I always give a range. And here's where I think you should list your house in order to get that price. And I always give a range. And then it's up to the seller to make the final decision. We sell houses typically at 97% of asking. In really hot price points, it might be closer to 98%. But that's not initial asking price. That's the final price it was reduced to before it sold. So if your initial price is unrealistic and you want to test the market, first of all, I think you're nuts. But secondly, you're going to waste valuable time, and your days on the market are going to build up, and all of a sudden you're going to have the house on the market 60 days with no offers before you get to a realistic price, and everybody's going to say, even though if you now have a realistic price, why has it been on the market 60 days? Let your agent set the price range for you. The final decision is always yours. If I can't come to accord with my seller on what the price should be, because it costs me in excess of $1,000 to list a house, I won't take the listing. I will tell them that I think you're being unrealistic, and perhaps you'd prefer to work with somebody else, and I'll refer to them a few other people that might want to work and probably would take the listing. There's an oldest game in the business is to take the listing and just wait for 6 months to go by and then mark it down to the right selling price. I haven't got time to do that. The time costs me money. It costs me a lot of effort. It has me focused on a house that may not sell at all when I'm not focusing on houses that do need my attention or bringing over new ones to the market that can be sold more quickly. So I'm a little bit particular. Some agents are not. Some agents are less scrupulous and will take it at the price you want. The best I will do is, let's say I say the house should be listed around $499. They want to try it at $525. I will say we'll list it for $525. But you will sign right now a price change at the end of 30 days if we don't have an offer to the price that I'm agreeing to. If they're not willing to do that, then it's not worth it for me. Real estate it's personal because it's your house. But at the same time, it's market-driven by what the people will pay, not what you want. And how many times have I heard Sally up the street has a very similar house and sold it for this price? Why can't I get that price? Well, it may be a similar house, but it might have new kitchens and bathrooms. It may have a better yard. It may have additional square footage. So what I try to do is get three or four comparables. Then I go by square footage based on all of the houses and try to show them not only here's where I think the comp sale is, and let's say one house has three bedrooms and everyone has four, I'll put the extra square footage in to break them equal and say, based on that, here's where I think your price should be. But if we can't come to accord, it's a waste of both of our times. So let me tell you a little about what I'm seeing going on in the market so that you can be aware of it. We have a very interesting market going on right now. Interesting from the viewpoint that we are selling houses in spite of ourselves. In Hunterdon County, we have, and I'm looking at the numbers while I'm talking, we have 898 houses, let's say 900. 900 houses for sale, and we sold 200. So you divide one and the other, and we got 4.5 months supply. 4.5 months supply is better than the average. If you look at it, the houses under 200, 2 months supply, under 300, 3 months supply, under 400, 3 months supply, under 400 to 500, 4 months. You get 5 to 6, we're at 7 months. 6 to 7, we're at 8 months. 8 to 9, now you're starting to get the picture. The higher up you go, the more time it's going to take to sell a house and the more competition you have. And competition is really tough. I'll just give you a good example. We have a very vibrant market in the under 400 market in Hunterdon County. In other words, if your house is anywhere from Route 31 plus a couple of miles to the west, over. So, in other words, as far west of you going, it's 2 miles past the Route 31, and it's under 400,000, we're probably going to sell it the week it comes on. And I'll give you a good example. Beaverbrook. I happen to live in Beaverbrook. There's 8 or 9 developments in Beaverbrook. Some of them were built around 2000. Some of them were built in the mid-80s, some in the late 70s. The houses in Beaverbrook range from condos that are 100 and a quarter, two-bedroom condos, maybe 200, townhouses starting in the 250s, newer townhouses with finished basements and early threes, larger townhouses in the high threes, early fours, and elaborate townhouses that go all the way up to maybe 450 or even more. So we have a range of 100 and a quarter to 450, depending on the square foot, depending on the age, and depending on what's in the house. But if we have 1,200 units in Beaverbrook, and that's a wild-ass guess, It's pretty accurate that it's probably within 100 of that. But let's say we have 1,200 units. I would say 900 of them are under $300,000. They're all one and two bedrooms, condos, and they're small townhouses that sell typically under 300 for the older models. The newer ones do get a little more money. So if we have 1,200 and a good percentage of them are under the 300K, I had a fellow who had his house listed as a rental with me. I've known a guy for years. I've rented it several times for him. And he said, my customer's moving out. I want to put it back on the market. I said, let's consider selling it. We tried it last year, and we didn't get any decent offer, so he wound up renting it. I said, look, we can rent it in August, no doubt about it. That's our busiest rental month. It's only June. Why don't we put it on the market for 2 months? And I took a look. There was nothing except for one bank-owned property with a lien against it under $300,000. So nothing, and probably 75% of our houses in there are under $300,000. Nothing on the market, put it up and sold in a day and a half. That's the kind of market we've got. And it sold for within 1% of the asking price. First guy that looked at it actually bought it. I mean, this is an exciting time. And yeah, there were some inspection issues, and I've got to fix those things up. But if your house is clean and we have no inventory and the market is there as it is right now, it will sell quickly, folks. My name is Joe Peters. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. You can take a look at my site at jpeters.com. I'm going to play my commercial one more time, and then we're going to go to the news. Thank you for tuning in. I will be back next week, and we'll be doing a 55-plus show at that point in time.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
Thanks for tuning in, guys. I'll talk to you next week of a 55-plus show for what's happening in our senior communities. Talk to you then.
USA Radio News.
Today, House Oversight Committee Chairman Trey Gowdy blasted James Comey in his opening statement at the high-profile congressional hearing regarding the IG report. Let's take a listen to a portion of his comments.
As we read this report, we're reminded of Jim Comey's decision to hold a July 5th press conference and appropriate the charging decision away from the prosecutors. We see Jim Comey drafting an exoneration memo before important witnesses like the target were even interviewed.
Today in Washington, D.C., President Trump delivered the keynote address at the National Federation of Independent Businesses. The president again brought up our border security.
And remember, these countries that we give tremendous foreign aid to in many cases, they send these people up, and they're not sending their finest. Does that sound familiar? Remember I made that speech and I was badly criticized? Oh, what's so terrible what he said. Turned out I was 100% right. That's why I got elected.
This is USA Radio News.
There's no question you need omega-3s. But which form should you take? Fish oil or